Calling all Swifties and champions of change, Like a Girl Media is rolling out the red carpet for you with our Thrive Like a Girl contest. We're all about celebrating powerful women leaders who inspire us to dream big and push boundaries. And who embodies that spirit more than Taylor Swift herself? Here's your chance to see her live in concert. We're giving away 2 tickets to Taylor Swift's show in London on Saturday, June 22nd. Imagine being part of the magic, all thanks to Like a Girl Media. Entering is easy. Subscribe, share, and show us which episodes inspired you the most. Visit our website or check our social media for all the details. Don't just dream it, be it. Thrive like a girl and make this summer unforgettable. Contest opens globally, void where prohibited, must be 18 or older to enter, no purchase necessary. Subscribe and share with hashtag Thrive Like a Girl and tag us at likeagirl_media for entry. Unlimited entries means unlimited chances. Winner chosen at random after contest closes May 20th, 2024. Will be notified via DM. Make sure your profiles are not private. Check full rules on our site. This is your shot to see Taylor Swift live. Don't miss it. This episode is brought to you by Chirpy Bird, Inc. CMS's Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, or MIPS, is super complex. And if clinicians ignore the program or perform poorly in it, it can result in a hit to their revenue and reputation. Chirpy Bird is proud to say that more than 95% of its clients are exceptional performers in MIPS, meaning they've maximized the score that directly translates into their Medicare reimbursement rate. Chirpy Bird offers their audit-proof services to practices of all sizes through an affordable monthly subscription that includes unlimited access to a regulatory expert who guides them in knowing what data to track, how to create workflows that make capturing that data easier, and ensures that they submit it all to CMS on time and performing at its best. Contact Chirpy Bird today or learn more at chirpybirdinc.com. That's chirpybirdinc.com. Welcome to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. You're watching High Tea with Grace. I'm super excited today to spill the tea on HIT with Effie Parks. She is founder of the Once Upon a Gene podcast and community for rare disease patients and caregivers. Welcome, Effie.
Good morning, Grace. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm so excited to have you. You know, you're one of my favorite people in the whole industry. And you know, I'm not even exaggerating when I say that.
I was like, yay, just another excuse to hang out. Let's do a podcast.
Always sounds good to me. So tell us all a little bit about yourself and your neck of the healthcare ecosphere.
Sure. So I live in Seattle, Washington with my husband and my 2 kiddos. My 5-year-old son, Ford, was born with a rare disease, something called CTNNB1. When he was diagnosed, he was 1 in 30 in the world. We now have identified almost 300 patients worldwide. So with access to genetic testing, it's definitely growing in numbers, which is great. But yeah, an introduction to motherhood like that was something I never expected. It was traumatic. It was isolating. It was like the world kind of collapsed, you know? It was a big shock. And it became just, you know, as time went on, as I saw the gaps between my kid and my friends' kids and my family's kids, the isolation just really grew. Which is something that's so commonplace in the world of rare diseases. So at some point, you know, I almost didn't recognize myself anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a happy person. I'm a fun person. I like to look at things with the glass half full. And I just wasn't feeling like that anymore. And I knew I had to do something about it. So you spend a lot of time in the car as a parent taking your kid to the doctor.
Oh, you and I
multiple
both know
times
that
a week.
Very well. Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just searched for everything I could, disability, rare disease, diagnosis. And I found about 5 podcasts and they became a lifeline to me and they dried up quick, you know, after a couple of weeks, they were gone. And I just knew I had to be a part of that conversation and I had to reach other parents that resonated more with me and find my people, because I just really didn't like how I felt, and I didn't like where things were going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. Like, what have you found to be the largest benefit to folks in the rare disease community having that regular podcast and that community where they can connect? Do you feel like it's the connection they have with each other, the strength they get from vulnerability and community? You know, what do you find to be the kind of the biggest benefit to those folks?
All of everything that you just mentioned. Yeah. But number one, the thing I'm hitting so hard on is the isolation factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody understands what your day to day is like. Nobody gets it. You can't relate to anyone. And you're also dealing with the sadness and the grief and the worry on top of it all. And when you can find someone else who gets your day-to-day, who understands this new jargon that you're using without having to explain it and without having to emotionally unload, it is everything. Yeah. You know, it's being seen for the first time in a completely unknown land. And that's huge. When somebody can come and see who you are and see what you're doing and just know how your day-to-day is without any questions, like, that's when you can kind of take a breath, come up, relax your shoulders, and figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah. And it always seems like, I think, you know, in the industry, in the digital health industry in particular, it seems that there's, you know, a ton of emphasis on the patient voice lately and getting that patient voice, but the rare disease voice is often left out. You know, how does that make you feel? You know, what benefits do you think having that rare disease community's voice might have to, you know, innovations that are happening in the industry right now?
If you're not tapping into rare disease, like, what are you even doing? I mean, over 7,000 rare diseases, 1 in 10 people actually have a rare disease. Wow. Like, sure, we might be N of one spread out all over the place, but like, someone you know has a rare disease. Like, we're everywhere. It's not as rare as the word. Like, some people don't even want to call it rare disease anymore because it kind of sets us apart even more so.
True.
So, you know, maybe that language will change because it is something else that makes people go, ooh, you know, maybe there isn't enough money in that, or maybe there isn't enough science in that, when actually, like, it's booming in so many areas, you know, like, science is moving at an insane rate. And the internet and just the ability to connect with people all over the world and share these stories and share these, list of symptoms and all the things, like, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And you can't not pay attention to it.
Yeah. What do you think that people could do to amplify that message and to kind of find out more about it? Do you feel like there is this kind of social swell just waiting to happen right now?
I mean, I definitely see it happening, especially since COVID, when everything became digital, right? Mm-hmm. It really brought so many things together and it broke down a lot of barriers, like, even just with, you know, being able to not have to take my kid to the doctor every day and pack up all of his equipment and all of that stuff, like, certain things that maybe you could keep home, joining clinical trials that you used to have to, like, maybe quit your job for, fly across the country for, break up your family for, like, restrictions on a lot of things like that have lessened, and they should, because it's too rigid. And especially if you want to include the rare community, like, there has to be another way.
That's true. And even the rare community knowing about clinical trials in the past, you know, maybe an academic, you know, institution put it out in a newspaper or something in the local area. And now all of a sudden it's on social and they're, you know, being more targeted on these communities. And so even the access to even knowing what's out there is also probably increasing because of social.
Totally. And things like podcasts and other media mediums, like, families like me are talking, you know, super motivated parents who are the ones making the advocacy groups and helping to push forward science, who are also just parents. Like, they're doing all of this stuff and they're talking about it. It's not like just this being in the sky that might be hopefully taking care of something for you. Like, they are in the trenches. They are the parents and the families of the parents, like, doing all of this work. They're teaching themselves the science. And like, it's amazing and it's so inspiring. And I think when you can actually connect their face, their voice, and hear their story, and not just maybe see an article about it, but realize it's your neighbor.
Yeah.
I mean, it can do so much by just people talking about it and it being more visible, like on social media, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm wondering, like, what are better ways that digital health could even include the patient voice, the rare community voice? And, you know, you mentioned clinical trials. That's huge, obviously, including that experience and being a part of those. What do you think about drug development or, you know, having that patient voice and that rare voice included in other types of innovations?
Well, like you said, I mean, that's something that's definitely a buzz right now, right? Like, it's trending, yeah. which is awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that most doctors and clinicians and researchers are absolutely on board with that too. You know, mm-hmm. like, it's not like the silos of everything is really helping anyone, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just not.
Yeah.
And I just really feel like the patients have just as much to bring to the table as anyone else. They're the ones living it day to day, especially in these rare disease worlds, right? Like, mm-hmm. they actually know about it. You might have read one paper on it. They know 20 other people in the community who are dealing with the same things. They know what medications everyone's taking. They know what the side effects are from these. They know what's actually important to them when something does work, whereas maybe the doctor's like, oh no, that side effect, that's no good, you can't take it anymore. But maybe it helped that person be able to, like, get up in the morning and make their own coffee, and that was life-changing.
Yeah.
But maybe it causes headaches. Like, what if they don't care about that? They just mm-hmm. got to be independent and do something for themselves. And I think when patients get to say those things, like, hey, this matters to me, this matters to my day-to-day, then the conversation can start.
Yeah, absolutely. 1,000%. I think you're right. You know, that's when the conversations can really start. And, you know, what should companies that are thinking about including the rare disease voice, what should they do to compensate these patients? You know, I think a lot of the times patients' perspectives are expected to be doled out for free, you know, in many ways. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, what are things that they need to keep in mind if they're hoping to include that rare patient voice?
You know, there's a lot of friction in that topic of whether patients and advocacy groups should be compensated for their time, which yeah. I feel like absolutely, especially if they're adding value to something, you know, in a professional setting. I do think as a patient, as like a parent, me personally, like if an amazing company like Global Genes wants me to share something, I'm not going to not do it because I'm not getting paid, because it yes, means so much true. To me. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's going to help maybe one parent or whatever it is. Like, I'm not so necessarily like tied up in the matter of like, I want to be compensated to mm-hmm. be an advocate, yeah. but I understand that. And I understand that these patients and their voices should not be used, and they shouldn't just be included to check a box. And that they absolutely are part of the team and they should be compensated. I just think that for different things and different reasons of why you would maybe participate, that I wouldn't necessarily say that you should always have to pay them, or you shouldn't take a thing unless you are paid, which, like I said, isn't agreed upon in this world. It's
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just my personal, like, how I move through it.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because we're also, I think, in this season, you know, trying to prove this value as well. And as they're seeing the value, it'll increase in their mind. And like you said, not just be a checked box.
Totally.
And not just be, okay, we got that done. You know, we asked a few patients what they thought, but really saying, okay, this impacts your everyday. And this is, we value that you're taking time from potentially finding the answer to your diagnosis to help us. And thank you for that, you know, and, you know, letting people know obviously about important resources out there, but also companies understanding that there's value here.
There's value here. Yeah. Should they be paid? Yes.
Yeah.
Can you also come at it as a form of service? Yes. Mm, yeah. And I don't think that you're muddying the waters by doing that and taking that away from the advocacy voice or the patient voice, as long as your intention is correct.
Yeah. Right? I totally agree with you on that. I really agree with you. So tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the topics that you've been covering lately on the podcast.
Oh my God, Grace. Okay. So I have, you know, I started this knowing zero about healthcare, about rare disease. I never went to the doctor in my life. So when I started this podcast, I did it to learn. I did it to make sure that the next parents' exposure to this wasn't as rocky as mine was. So I literally, everything I ever have a problem with, I'm like, I gotta get a guest on that. Everything I have people message me about, I get someone on it. So like, I cover things from just patient stories. We cover things about grief. We cover things about what's best to pack in your hospital bag when your kid's inpatient for a long time.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about mental health, emotional well-being, self-care. We talk about, I mean, there's just so much to our day-to-day. We talk about friendships. We talk about inclusion. We talk about disability in general. Like, this is a world that my generation wasn't really exposed to yet still. Like, I didn't go to school with kids who had disabilities. They were walked in the halls when we were in class. I didn't grow up with anyone like my son. So sure, I'm a regular human being who has manners and I care and I'm empathetic, but like, I don't know. I don't know what anyone who has been going through and what they've been dealing with, because quite frankly, disability was something that was kind of hush-hush and kind of hidden. And if I'm going to bring up like the most amazing kid, like I have to make sure that it wasn't like that. So I have to be a part of changing that. And parents like me are just constantly learning, and we're learning from each other and we're learning from the disability community. Mm-hmm. Because like, things have got to change. Like, it needs a rebranding. It's 2021. And like, adults still like are so uncomfortable around a 5-year-old in a wheelchair sometimes. It's just,
there's no reason for it. And you know, they're the same as you. It's just there, but in many ways, there's the struggles they have are make them stronger than you. So maybe, you know, maybe instead of rare disease, it should be stronger than you disease
seriously
patient, person, because of all, you know, all they have to go through. But it's not a disability. Their difficulties are in many ways something that's making them stronger than any of us, you know, and it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I got like veered off from your question, but yeah, I mean, we talk about advocacy groups a lot, like parents who get these diagnoses are like, oh my gosh, there's only 30 other patients. What do I do? So, you know, we have topics on how to make your advocacy group, how to like get a board, how to fundraise, how to find researchers who want to study your gene. Like, we're doing everything over at Once Upon a Gene.
Like, it sounds like it. Wow. That's amazing.
Well, and there's so many parents who are just like, they blow my mind every day. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm so glad you have a rare disease kid, because we need your brain.
Yeah. Incredible. And I can't imagine just that moment when, you know, similar to what you had when they figured out what this is and that it was a rare disease and oh my God, I'm alone in this. And then looking you up and finding you and you being to them exactly what you needed, which is just so powerful.
It's amazing. I mean, one of those podcasts, I always have to shout them out. That I found when I was like in the trenches and when I was just horribly sad, was a podcast called The Two Disabled Dudes.
It's a great name.
They're literally the best. Everyone go follow and subscribe. There are two dudes who both have Friedreich's ataxia, and their podcast is fun and beautiful and smart and witty, and they just give each other crap the whole time. And, you know, they're the patients. They're not parents raising a kid, but like, I found connection for the very first time through their podcast. And like, they brought like light and hope and like made me stop being so scared that my son is disabled and his life is going to be ruined, because I was listening to these two guys who are just the most amazing people I've ever known. And that is when I was like, oh my gosh, like, you don't have to be the same as me to understand me. Like, mm-hmm. You don't have to be a mom of a kid with a rare disease. Like, mm-hmm. That's what's beautiful about the rare disease community, is that they just all get it. And there are people like them who are out there, you know, talking about living beyond your circumstances. And it was just like the light that I needed at that time. And they're now very good friends of mine. But like back then, when I'm like crying and washing the dishes and listening to these guys, like I couldn't imagine that it was going to be the thing that pulled me out. And then that I was going to be able to talk to them every day. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to make a podcast that was contributing to that, to finding that mom in the car who doesn't want to go inside because, you know, she just got horrible news, or she's just depressed in general over mm-hmm. everything that's going on. Because like the sooner you can find people who get it, the sooner you can do something about it, the sooner you can find hope, the sooner you can go raise money for your kid or mm-hmm. go change laws or do whatever, is by finally hearing someone else, right? And feeling seen.
Yeah. It's so powerful. Just that community and the light at the end of the tunnel that that community can bring. It's fantastic, especially when you're going through so much. You know, when you're working with doctors and you're, you know, working with physicians, you know, what do you find to be the most helpful for you? Just from a, like a logistics standpoint, in terms of like, you know, managing everything, do you feel like it's, you need their emotional support? Do you feel like it's helpful for them to have tools that, you know, are make it easy for you as a parent to manage the condition? You know, just kind of speaking from a mother's standpoint, from, you know, being right in the throes of it, you know, what do you find to be the most useful for you in terms of, you know, using technology to help manage the condition?
Mm-hmm. It is pretty broken. Yeah. Honestly, it's not really that helpful. Other parents are the most helpful because they arm you with what questions to ask and what not to leave without. You know, like our medical records aren't shared, like the legwork that I have to do to get one doctor to look at something else that Ford just did. Mm-hmm. The disconnect in just communication along our healthcare stuff is just, I had no idea that this doctor wouldn't talk to this doctor and that they just wouldn't have all of his records. Like that stuff is true and it's horrible. And it makes parents, I mean, they're drowning and they don't know what questions to ask. And doctors have a limited time, right, to be able to be with each patient. They're busy. And I wouldn't say that anything is really that helpful because it's broken. I think one thing that should be provided that would be extra helpful to every parent mm-hmm. like myself is just automatically getting enrolled in something like palliative care. Like that is when the doctors will talk to each other, right? And that you'll have an advocate for you, making sure that the decisions that you're making are the ones you actually want to make. Mm. And they kind of help coordinate that care, but you have to get that approved. You have to get that paid for. Not everybody knows it exists. Sometimes
yeah.
it's not.
Yeah, what is palliative care? What is that?
It's basically a nice, fuzzy, warm blanket that helps guide you through all of your medical appointments and really takes into account like what's best for your family. Like, is it best for your family that your kid has this procedure right now? Or, I mean, so many things. They help you deal with the scheduling, and they help the doctors communicate, and they make sure all of that is just in one nice little package. And they really help carry the entire team, which is something that you need, especially since most of us aren't exposed to the medical world and mm-hmm. we're dealing with a sick kid and yeah. we're trying to find cures and we're trying to raise money and we're trying to be normal. And I want to watch a Netflix show. Like there's mm-hmm. so much that goes into it, and there's not a lot of tech that is really working right now.
Yeah.
To make your doctor's appointments easier, to make mm-hmm. any of that easier. So I wish that I could say, oh, this is so amazing, but like yeah. nothing has been amazing.
It's
been
like hard. It's just disjointed, hard. Nothing's explained well. The palliative care kind of brings some of it together to help you coordinate it all, but it's not tech savvy. It's just people and helpful information savvy.
Yeah. I mean, even just, you know, Ford has had a chronic lung infection mm-hmm. and his pulmonologist needed to see a scan that we had when we were out of town in a different state. And like, why can't you just get that? I had to call the administration. I had to sign a bunch of papers. I had to send a fax. They then mailed me a CD that I then had to drive an hour to my doctor to have. Like, couldn't the doctor just get that information? You have my HIPAA thing signed. Like, also, can we get it electronically? Like, why are we mailing a CD and then having me drive it to the doctor's office? Like, that's real life. That's what we're doing.
Wow.
And the fact that like all of our medical records just aren't digitized in one place where they can be seen by all of Ford's doctors and clinicians is really mind-blowing that isn't something that's commonplace yet.
Yeah, that is absolutely terrible and incredible. It's incredible.
I will say that I do have amazing doctors and on Ford's team now, but that was a learning curve. You know, I had to learn that I could actually fire a doctor or mm-hmm. move on and get a second opinion. And also something I didn't really know about. Also something that I didn't think was respectful, but you can do it and you have to do it. And hopefully you are able to find a team that really does care about your kid and that reads a chart before you come into their appointment and maybe does a little search on their own about CT and NB1. It's not like they're yeah. going to have to dig deep. There's not a yeah. lot of info on mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. but it means so much to me when I go into an appointment and a doctor looked it up. Like that means a lot to me.
You would think that would be the, at least what would happen. They would have at least looked it up and you wouldn't have to teach them in the first.
No, I would say that happened maybe like 30% of the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were there any resources that helped you find doctors? You know, I know your community is a fantastic resource for people to connect other people with great doctors. But for you, you know, how did you find these doctors?
I'm really lucky. I live in Seattle. We have a children's hospital. That's it. I got lucky.
Yeah.
There are like Facebook groups that you can find in all of your areas, I'm pretty sure, where you can find parents like me and those parents are talking, right? And hopefully you find the good ones that don't have that negative Facebook tone or aren't just people yammering on about things, but parents who are like, this place is great, this doctor is great, this speech therapist is great. So you get referrals from just like your local networks of parents. But yeah, I mean, I have a giant, beautiful children's hospital that gives me a lot of options.
Yeah. That is beautiful. And it's true that it's a blessing to be in a large city like that with a children's hospital. And you wonder what do people in rural communities do? What do they do when this happens? You know, when they find out they have a rare disease or their child has a rare disease, do they move? Do they just rely on telehealth?
Some of them move. Lots of them move. Depending on the needs of your kiddo, you have to be by a bigger hospital or, you know, it totally depends. Hopefully you're able to move, right? There are a lot of services in like a lot of the areas that I know are pretty rural where like my CT and NB1 families are. I wouldn't necessarily say maybe they have the best care. I don't know, mm-hmm. but they are getting at least what they need service-wise with like therapies. And I just hope they're getting what they need. But yeah, like that's another problem, right?
Yeah.
What would be nice too is like if doctors could pass over like state lines with their licenses, right? Like I wish my friend Tara's kid could see our neurologist. Like, why can't she? Like, I wish that stuff wasn't a barrier where they could treat patients, especially when there's 30 of them.
Yeah.
And maybe one's in, you know, South Dakota. Like, what?
and make
why can't they have an appointment with you instead of flying to Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing.
Well, we'll put that on our rare patient wish list. We should develop one for this, seriously, and say, this is our rare patient wish list. All right, America, make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, the rare disease life is, it's not for the faint of heart. And like, it is hustling. Like, everyone is hustling every day.
Yeah.
And they're just amazing. And they're so caring. And, you know, they're getting stuff done. Like, the parents that I have met through the rare disease world are some of the most brilliant. And they're the people who are actually changing the world. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing because nobody's been doing it for them. And that's what they'll tell you when your kid's diagnosed. The families, you know, it's like, nobody's going to do this for you. Nobody's mm-hmm. going to just study your gene randomly, like maybe, but you have to do it. You have to go figure it out. You have to blaze the trail. And that goes with everything from the doctors to the medical records to the appointment hunting. Like mm-hmm. you have to figure it all out by yourself.
It's incredible. You know, with this just incredible feat that you have to work through day to day, just for some level of normalcy, you know, what are things that you do to keep peace for yourself? You know, you were kind of talking about some of the mental health topics that you've talked through, like, you know, what are some things that really help with that?
So the podcast has actually been something that really breathes in a lot of energy for me, mm-hmm. Especially just meeting these people who like make my cheeks hurt because they're so amazing. And that's been one thing of coping for me. Another really just silly thing I do that has had some of the largest impact on me is I have this big, huge magnet, like chalkboard on my fridge. And my sister told me to do this. I drew 4 oxygen tanks. And she told me to put in each oxygen tank what I had to do every single day, no matter what. So I put in breathing. I had to learn how to breathe because I recognized I had anxiety for the first time. I put in eat something healthy. I drew pictures, so it's really pretty.
Yeah.
Drink water and go outside. And those are 4 things that, like, no matter what, Effie has to do, or it's not great. I'm not going to get a lot done. I'm not going to feel good. I'm not going to have enough energy. Like, those are just things for me that mm-hmm. really make a difference and that are a habit that I created years ago that made a huge difference. And something about self-care is, I mean, it's the narrative on self-care also needs to change, especially for parents like us. Like, mm-hmm. one of my favorite therapists, her name's Rose Reif. She always talks about how self-care is boring. It's not pretty. It's not glossy. It's not fancy. It's the little tiny things that you make a habit of doing every single day, no matter what. And she correlates it to the toothbrush test. Like, you would never leave your house without brushing your teeth. Like, if your kids are being annoying and you lost a shoe and you're doing all that, like, you're still going to brush your teeth before you leave. Because if you don't, the ramifications of that are really going to suck.
Yeah.
And that's what self-care is, right? So finding those things.
I know, people think self-care is like, go to the spa, get your nails done, you know?
Yeah.
Sleep 12 to 14 hours, whatever.
Yeah.
You're right. It's drinking water.
And nourishing
it's drinking your water. Body.
It's finding the little things that like make a big impact over time. Maybe it's wearing a bright, beautiful lipstick, because every time you catch yourself in the mirror, you're like, oh my God, I love that. Like, that is something that fills you up, right?
Yeah.
And it might sound so little, but like, it's really not. It's really not, especially when you're dredging through some really tough stuff. So I do that. That's like my thing that I like swear by.
Mm-hmm.
My 4 oxygen tanks are full every single day. And those ones really mean a lot to me. And then, I laugh. Like, my kids are so cute. We just make sure to laugh at our house. Ford has the best laugh in the world. If you ever listen to my podcast, mm-hmm. the episode ends with his laughter, and like, mm-hmm. you can't not snap out of whatever's happening when you laugh. So finding those moments for me and really just slowing down. Mm-hmm. And it's totally changed than before. Cause yeah, before it was like, I'm going to Scottsdale and I'm staying in this hotel. And now like, it's not that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I would do that. For sure.
Let's do that. That'll be our next plan. We'll do it.
Oh, let's meet in Scottsdale.
I love it. I love it. We actually have offices in Scottsdale. So it would be perfect.
I will meet. It's like one of my favorite cities. I'll go. I'll meet you.
I love it. That would be fantastic. So I am just so grateful to have had you on today. Effie, you are a bright light in this world. And I'm so grateful for all the work you're doing in the rare disease community to bring people together, inspire, have that light at the end of the tunnel. And I know, you know, you're not doing it alone. You're working together with amazing people to do this. And thank you so much. How can our listeners find you online?
Thank you so much, Grace. All of that right back at you. You can find me everywhere. EffieParks.com. The podcast is called Once Upon a Gene. You can download it anywhere. I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. You can email me anytime, especially if you have a friend or a family member or whatever who might be entering this world. Like, please send them my way. Don't hesitate.
Thank you so much, Effie. And thank you for listening. This is Hit Like a Girl podcast. Check out our website for more episodes with amazing guests just like Effie.
I did bring my tea, by the way.
Oh, did you? What tea did you bring?
Okay, so I brought my special tea from my hometown that I buy online now because it just makes me think of home.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's not even my favorite tea, because it is a little too licorice-y for me, but I still buy it because it's my hometown.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I know I'm drinking some chamomile lavender today.
Love your cup.
And it has like a little I don't know what you call it, colander or something, so that the tea doesn't get in your mouth, obviously, but.
Yeah, a little steeper thing.
Yeah, steeper.
Well, yeah, it's a steeper.
Like a built-in.
That's a really cute cup.
Thank you. I like your cup too, Once Upon a Gene. I need one of those.
And there's a backside. I'll send you one.
That is so good.
This is a great cup. And you can just put your whole hand in there. So when you need your coffee, like you just drink it.
That's awesome.
I'll send you one.
Cheers to that.
Like a Girl Media is more than a media network. It's a community. We want to meet you and amplify your voice and the voices of outstanding women innovating in healthcare. Interested in starting your own podcast or hosting an event near you? Connect with us online or in person. We're here to support and empower you.
Hit Like a Girl podcast is a proud member of the Health Podcast Network. One thing I love about working with them is that they're mission-driven, which means that they're dedicated to featuring authoritative shows, hosts, and guests who take on the tough topics in healthcare with empathy, expertise, and a commitment to excellence. If you're looking for bingeable content related to the healthcare industry, they've got more than 8,000 episodes on demand waiting for you. From professional development, the patient voice, digital health, innovation and entrepreneurship, and of course, health IT, they've got you covered. So this is your official invitation to check them out at healthpodcastnetwork.com.